Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 14th, 2022. Section A. Hospital still delaying vaccine decision. Midland Health. Injunction of CMS mandate remains in effect at this time. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Health officials stated Thursday they will continue to wait before acting on a Biden administration vaccine mandate. On Thursday, the Supreme Court decided to allow the administration to proceed with a vaccine mandate for most healthcare workers in the U.S. However, Midland Health officials said afterward that the decision to grant the stay of the injunction applies specifically to the cases that were before it. The case pertaining to CMS's mandate as to Texas healthcare facilities was not on appeal before the Supreme Court. Rather, the injunction of the CMS mandate issued in the Texas lawsuit remains in effect at this time. So the waiting game continues. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers previously stated the organization is prepared to proceed with CMS requirements if that becomes necessary. Hospital officials have also stated in the past and said again this month that the mandate will lead to staff leaving Memorial Hospital. Myers said last week that the percentage of vaccinated staff members is around 78%. The Associated Press reported Thursday that the vaccine mandate that the court will allow to be enforced nationwide scraped by on a 5-4 vote, with Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh joining the liberals to form a majority. The mandate, the AP reported, covers virtually all healthcare workers in the country applying to providers that receive federal Medicare or Medicaid funding. It affects 10.5 million workers at 76,000 healthcare facilities, as well as home healthcare providers. We are contributing to monitor the impact of the Supreme Court ruling on Texas healthcare facilities. While it seems likely that MMH policies implementing the CMS vaccine mandate will have to be reinstituted, we will not do so until additional guidance is received from the Amarillo Court and CMS. As more guidance is received, we'll act accordingly. Previously, Myers said that Midland Health leaders don't think that the mandate was accomplishing a lot other than giving us some potential staffing challenges. Check out these facts about local gas prices. By Stuart Doreen. Midland is again on the verge of having the highest average price for a gallon of regular unleaded in the state. The average in El Paso dropped 10 cents this week, and that means the average there is $3.07, 1 cent higher than the average in Midland. Five of the 27 larger metropolitan areas that AAA Texas surveys showed the averages at or above $3, including Midland at $3.06 and Odessa at $3.05. The average in Midland didn't change this week. AAA Texas reports that the average has dropped 2 cents going back to mid-December. The average across the state has increased 1 cent. The average in Midland is up 81 cents over the year, while the state average has increased 84 cents during the same period. Other averages across the region include 286 in Amarillo and Lubbock and 288 in San Angelo. AAA Texas reported drivers in Corpus Christi and Victoria at 282, the lowest average in the larger metropolitan areas. Red Cross seeking blood donors amid shortage. By Catherine Marfan. The American Red Cross is urging people to donate blood as the organization faces its worst national blood shortage in over a decade. The shortage has forced healthcare providers to decide which patients will get life-saving transfusions and which have to wait for the supply to be replenished. The Red Cross has had to limit blood supplies to hospitals, and there have been periods with less than a one-day supply of critical blood types in recent weeks. The organization made a similar call for blood donations in December amid low donor turnout. On its website, the Red Cross said much of the current blood shortage is driven by the ongoing pandemic. On top of the 10% drop in blood donations since March, Blood drives continue to be canceled because illness, staffing shortages, and weather-related issues. As COVID has affected schools and universities, blood supplies have been impacted too. Students account for about a quarter of all blood donations, but have made up only 10% during the pandemic. While all blood types are needed, people with type O blood are especially encouraged to donate. Type O negative is the universal blood type, while type O positive can be given to anyone who is Rh positive. Anyone 16 or older, at least 110 pounds and in good health, can donate blood. More specific eligibility criteria can be viewed online. Appointments can be made online through the Blood Donor app or by calling 1-800-733-2767. County Livestock Show continues. The County Livestock Association is excited to present Midland County's 70th Annual Livestock Show. The show kicked off Wednesday with an agriculture mechanics competition. Competitions on Thursday include poultry, rabbits, and the gilt show, followed by market swine. Friday's events begin at 8 with the market goat show, breeding goat show, and market lamb show. The heifer show will start at noon with steers immediately following. The horse show will conclude the day's activities at 5 or 30 minutes after the conclusion of the steer show. We get to celebrate the accomplishments of our junior livestock exhibitors at the premium auction on Saturday. Saturday's festivities begin at 12:45 with the Pee Wee Goat Show, and the premium auction will take place at 1 p.m. Exhibit Kite Symphony to open at Ballroom Marfa next weekend by J.C. Lewis. Kite Symphony will open at from noon to 6 p.m. January 22nd, 23rd at Ballroom Marfa. The multidisciplinary exhibition is rooted in sound, featuring new work by Roberto Carlos Lang and Christy Sword. The exhibition includes a newly commissioned film, outdoor composition and installation, animation, series of sculptures, drawings, and a special Earth Day performance on April 22nd. The artists present an impressionistic film that documents their experiments with wind and light interacting with kites, handmade mylar instruments, found objects, and native plant materials, according to a press release. The exhibition also includes star scores, visual music that sets sonic compositions in conversation with analog animations of galaxies orbiting, multiplying, and expanding through an imaginary celestial space inspired by the region's dark skies. Sword's visual scores will be on view with her rhythmic and repetitive brush marks, revealing a landscape in constant motion. An outdoor installation will transform the ballroom's courtyard into a listening space where Lang presents a new work, weaving together sounds and field recordings collected from the community. Admission is by reservation. Reservations can be made at www.ballroommarfa.org. COVID cancellations. Madagascar the Musical, delayed. An event at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center has been postponed due to the COVID Omicron virus, according to Facebook. Madagascar, the musical live tour, which was set for June 14th, has been postponed. Ticket buyers will be refunded for purchases. Those who bought tickets online through eTex or through the Wagner Knoll box office via credit card will have their refund processed and credited back to the credit card in the next few days. Once the refund has been processed, an email confirmation will be sent from Thank You eTex. We apologize for the disappointment and inconvenience. Once the dates can be rescheduled, we'll be sure to reach out to inform you of the availability of tickets for the rescheduled date. Those with questions or concerns can contact the box office at 552-4437. Odessa Arts has canceled the One Book Odessa launch tomorrow at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. The event was canceled out of abundance of caution and in consideration of the health and safety of participants and staff members. Those interested in the event can visit the Odessa Arts Facebook page for ticket and book giveaway information. Tickets can be purchased at odessaarts.org.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing reading two additional small stories from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, January 14th. Local sheriff's deputies arrest man facing warrant for murder in Mexico, from staff reports. On Thursday, Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies arrested a man facing a murder warrant in Mexico. Earlier in the day, Midland County Sheriff's Office and the United States Marshals Service received information that fugitive Manuel Adriano Ruiz, who was wanted for a federal supervised release violation and a murder warrant issued in Mexico, was believed to be in the Midland area, according to a news release from Midland County. Adriano Ruiz was located in the 2400 block of West County Road 123 in Midland County. He was taken into custody without incident and placed in the U.S. Marshals federal holding, according to the news release. Multiple lanes closed near HEB. A contractor working for a private utility company struck a water main on Midkiff Road, south of Wadley Avenue, near the HEB grocery store, according to the City of Midland. Multiple lanes will be closed southbound on Midkiff Road, including through the Wadley Avenue intersection, in order to allow emergency repairs to be made, the city reported in a news release. The full extent of the damage is currently being assessed, but lane closures should be expected for the next week or so. From staff reports.
Vernon Ray Harkins entered the gates of heaven on January 7th. Visitation will be on Friday, January 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle Welsh. Church services will be at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday at City's Church in Midland. Burial will follow at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Robert H. Sadler passed away on January 12th. Services pending with Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, January 14th, 2022. Officials urge sick to stay home. For the first time in months, officials from all over the city of Odessa held a COVID-19-related press conference Thursday, and the overwhelming message was, if you're sick, stay home. Officials from Odessa Fire Rescue, Medical Center Hospital, Odessa Regional Medical Center, UTPB, and Ector County Independent School District met with members of the media via Zoom to share the latest news on COVID. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief of Staff, Dr. Rohith Saravanan, said the number of COVID positive patients in Odessa is close to the highest levels seen since the start of the pandemic. Quote, this is not the conversation that we wanted to be having. In November, when we saw the Delta variant surge start to come down, our hope was we could say goodbye to COVID in 2021 and say hello to a new 22. Unfortunately, this silly Omicron variant starts to show up, end quote, and is more infectious than the earlier variants, Saravanan said. On the positive side, however, Saravanan said vaccinated people infected with Omicron are being hospitalized at lower numbers than those who were infected with other variants, and they are recovering quickly. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said they are seeing recovery rates of 3 to 5 days among the vaccinated. Unlike several months ago, Saravanan pointed out we now have vaccines, oral drugs are available, and so are monoclonal antibody treatments. The doctor said we're seeing high hospital numbers simply because of the sheer numbers of people catching the virus. 50% of those being tested right now are testing positive, he said. It's for that reason Saravanan and the others at the press conference urge people who feel under the weather to stay home. They're not worried about the availability of beds at local hospitals, but rather the number of doctors, nurses, and respiratory therapists who are needed to treat them. Since the pandemic, thousands of healthcare workers have left the industry because of burnout, and many are currently homesick with the virus, Saravanan said. Saravanan said COVID is unlikely to completely go away. Quote, we're going to see new variants come up time and time again, end quote, Tippin said. Quote, it's going to get through the population, and then there's going to be nobody left to infect. True, this variant will have no one left to infect, and then there will be another variant, and it will want to infect everyone else again, end quote, Saravanan said. quote, this is eventually going to become what we call endemic, which means it's around like the flu. It's going to be around, but hopefully it's not going to cause severe enough disease for us to see what we have today, which is hundreds of employees out of work, hundreds of people not being able to go to school, and it's affecting our lives by putting us in the hospital, shutting down our businesses, and things like that, end quote. Sarah Bannon urged everyone to continue to wear their masks and wash their hands, but most importantly, stay home. Quote, if you're sick, please isolate yourself. If you're sick and have any symptoms, don't say, it's seasonal allergies. Oh, it's just a cold. Oh, it's just a sore throat. No, it's not. End quote, Sarah Bannon said. Quote, think about what's in our community right now. 50% of the tests being done are coming back positive for COVID. If you're sick, it's most likely COVID. End quote. If you've got symptoms, the doctor said it's not even necessary to get tested, unless you need a negative test result to go back to work. Quote, if you've got the symptoms, it's safe to assume that's what you have, end quote, he said. Among the other news revealed at the press conference, Medical Center Hospital has 73 employees out due to COVID-19. Odessa Regional Medical Center has 34 out, and Scenic Mountain Medical Center has 24 out. All facilities have requested additional staffing assistance, but said they are not yet close to having to eliminate elective surgeries or open tent wings. 300 people were tested as of 3:30 p.m. Thursday at the City of Odessa's newest testing site at UTPB. Although there were some, quote, hiccups, end quote, early in the day because of an overwhelming response, those have been worked out, said Assistant Odessa Fire Rescue Chief Rod Huber. The UTPB testing site is located at the softball and soccer fields on the northeast corner of the campus and will operate 7 days a week, including Martin Luther King Jr. Day from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. People need to register by texting DOCSTX to 41411. The City of Odessa's Regeneron Monoclonal Antibody Treatment Clinic at MCH has served 4,200 people so far, and the state has extended the clinic another 30 days, Huber said. MCH had 89 COVID patients Thursday. 26 were in critical condition, and 19 of them were on ventilators. ORMC had 26 COVID patients Thursday, and 4 were on ventilators. Scenic Mountain had 12 COVID patients, and 3 were in ICU. 90% of the patients were unvaccinated, and 69% were 50 years of age or older. 850 ECISD staff and students have tested positive for COVID since Monday. The district is conducting 150 tests a day. Quote, it's hitting us just like everyone else, so it's all hands on deck to cover classes, end quote, said Alicia Syverson, associate superintendent. The University of Texas Permian Basin reported 29 positive cases Thursday. Both UTPB and ECISD reported staff members are doing what they can to limit the spread through constant sanitizing. Lunch to cover networking skills. Figuring out the difference between a salad fork and a dessert spoon, elevator speeches, and being presentable are just a few of the items that will be covered during the Young Men's Etiquette Lunch Saturday. The event is set for noon to 2 p.m. and will be held at the MCM Elegante Hotel. One Objective, Inc., a nonprofit organization, is hosting about 50 Ector County ISD middle and high school students. Attorney Gavin Norris of One Objective said the organization was started in fall 2020 as a result of Ector County ISD's report on the disparate disciplinary treatment of minorities, especially African Americans, when they made up only about 4% of the district population. Norris said the group got together to figure out what they could do to help correct this, and One Objective was the result. The group includes business owners, nonprofit leaders, people in the community, several athletes, and coaches. Special presenters will be Roy Williams, Permian High School graduate and former NFL wide receiver, Bradley Marquez, Odessa High School graduate and former NFL wide receiver, and Heather Valenzuela, former ECISD educator. Norris said some parents wanted their children exposed to role models, and others had heard about what One Objective was doing and wanted to be part of it. Valenzuela will be the etiquette presenter. Quote, she's also our presenter and lecturer for the entire professional and networking series, end quote, Norris said. Quote, the stars aligned because she's also the professionalism adjunct professor at UTPB, so this is kind of her area of expertise, end quote, Norris said. One Objective's name was also the goal, Norris said. quote, that's helping students within ECISD, all students but with a special focus on minority students, being able to improve some of their perceptions and realities and growth, and being able to see folks that are a product of ECISD or West Texas education, and to be able to help monitor them, mentor them to success as they matriculate through school to graduation, end quote. As strategic planning, the organization, quote, adopted, end quote, a group of students from Nimitz and mentored them last year. In one of their strategic planning meetings, Marquez gave an example of him and his mom being invited to a nice dinner, but not being prepared for the environment. Quote, we came up with the idea of an etiquette lunch. It was a great way to work in networking, introducing each other and socializing with junior high and high school students as part of one of our first events in 2022. We do this annually, but we're doing more and more larger events with a larger group of students, end quote, Norris added. The core group of students, one objective is mentoring, is from Nimitz Middle School. They were approved the week of January 10th to with students at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School. Students on the Permian Odessa basketball teams will be joining. Norris said this is the first of a professional development series that will cover etiquette, how to act when you attend a networking event, practicing your elevator speech, and how to dress, for example. Attendees will wear shirts, ties, and slacks. They can bring one parent with them. Norris said these are skills the young men will need later in life that one objective can help them hone now. The organization also will be working with students to help them keep their grades up and mentor them. He said they will show highlights of Williams and Marquez in high school, college, and the NFL. Then Marquez and Williams will present 10 to 15 minute talks. Marquez will focus on why events like this are important and tell his story on why etiquette is important. Williams will speak toward the end on why events like the lunch are important and also having a plan B because not everyone goes into the NFL. And if they do, the lifespan is usually short for most athletes, Norris said. He added that he went through a similar program in about 5 hours about 10 years ago before taking part in the Archer Fellowship in Washington, D.C. He noted that the programs are something they may offer to adults in the future. Quote, it's something that we're definitely considering. I think everyone can benefit from it. What's a dinner fork? Salad fork? Where does your water go? Where is the bread and the meat? Your dessert spoon? All of that. End quote, Norris said. Management company reps talk sports fields. Representatives from sports facilities companies of Clearwater, Florida, the firm that has taken over management of the University of Texas Permian Basin sports fields, talked about plans for the complex at a Discover Odessa Tourism meeting Thursday. The gathering was held at the La Quinta Inn and Suites off Vaudrey Road and State Highway 191. Efforts by UTPB to keep an agreement with the City of Odessa to provide sports fields to leagues and associations on campuses were rejected last year. UTPB has 93 acres, about 14 diamonds, and space for 20 to 30 rectangle grass fields that they can set up in any dimensions. Quote, our presentation here today was really just to reintroduce the Basin Sports Complex to the community, end quote, National Director of Programming Donald Engstrom said after Thursday's meeting. Quote, the presentation was about us, about our company, and the rebranding that is happening with the sports complex out at UTPB that we're now calling the Basin Sports Complex, end quote. Engstrom said Sports Facilities Companies was hired to make the complex available to everybody in the community. The other priority is to develop sports tourism in Odessa and create a balance between local programming as well as bringing in regional and national events. He said they also want to create a successful economic and financial aspect to the complex. Quote, right now there are a lot of capital improvements. We have a strategic plan and the timeline to do that at the facility. That's everything from the parking lots to the concession stands to the restrooms, end quote, Engstrom said. UTPB has acquired soccer goals as well. Engstrom added that UTPB Athletic Director Todd Dooley and President Sandra Woodley have a grand vision and long-term plan to make the sports complex a special place for the community. Making the complex more available, he agreed, was a good first step. Quote, we are really, really excited about the opportunity here just because of how Odessa is situated in West Texas. And so, in our presentation, we talked a little bit about just the concentration of sports events in the area. And right now, 3/4 of the sports tourism events that are out there are taking place in the South and in the Midwest, and Odessa sits right in the middle of all of that. With the capital improvements that are being made at the complex and our ability through our network to attract the best and highest performing events, we're really optimistic about the future for UTPB and the Basin Sports Complex. End quote, Engstrom said. He added that the improvements at the sports complex have started. Quote, the university made a significant investment initially in brand new soccer goals, and if you go out there now, you actually see them. They're all stacked up in one area, and so that's really step one. And as part of our plan, we're just getting started there. There's kind of laying out what that appropriate timeline is in the expenditure of those investments, end quote, Engstrom said. He added that this is a long-term project, and it's a, quote, never-ending project, end quote. Quote, we have contracted with a maintenance group to come in and basically maintain and improve the playing surfaces right now. The next step will be to determine what is actually needed to get everything that needs a fresh coat of paint. There's fences that need repair. It's a long list. All of those things are being prioritized, end quote, Engstrom said. He added that they would love to do everything at once, but the reality is that that's not always possible, so they have to be strategic about it. Andy Cedillo has been brought on as general manager. Engstrom said he comes from the Midland Parks and Recreation Department. ABM is handling maintenance and landscaping, Engstrom said. Quote, he's already done a tremendous job with making the facility available. We had 7 different rentals last night, and I think there's 9 different groups that are coming out tonight to use the space, end quote, Engstrom said. Quote, so we're already starting to see the interest in using the space. That was immediate from when we even got on. There's the outreach from the community, from different soccer groups, baseball organizations, youth, and adult. It's really been pretty incredible, end quote. Dave Pritchett, Chief Operating Officer of Sports Facilities Company, said they have big hopes for the complex. Quote, and we're looking forward to making improvements with the university to provide a better experience for users, both local users, community users, as well as travelers, end quote, Pritchett said. MOSC features musician friends in February. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale kicks off 2022 performances with Friends of the Symphony at 7:30 p.m. February 5th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, a press release stated. The event will feature Melissa Graham Hansen, former MOSC principal flute, and Vincent Pierce, MOSC principal harp, performing Mozart's Concerto for Flute and Harp. The piece, composed in 1778 Paris, is unusual for its time because the harp was not yet considered a standard orchestral instrument. In fact, it was still under development and not yet in its current form. Mozart's genius for melodic writing is evident in the lovely back and forth between flute and harp, joined by the orchestra in a joyful finish. Dr. Melissa Graham Hansen is the former principal flutist of the Midland Odessa Symphony Orchestra and West Texas Winds. Known for her unique sound palette, she enjoys performing both orchestral and chamber music. She has served as a faculty member at the University of Texas Permian Basin and Odessa College, as well as taught private lessons. Melissa received her Doctor of Musical Arts degree from the University of Colorado, Boulder, and currently pursues her passion for pedagogy, writing, and other independent and collaborative skills. Vincent Pierce is principal harpist of the Midland Odessa Symphony Orchestra. He is the former director of the harp program for ECISD and also served as adjunct instructor of harp at UTPB and Odessa College. In fall of 2021, he began working as harp facilitator for Round Rock ISD, where he teaches at Round Rock High School and Cedar Valley, Chisholm Trail, and Walsh Middle Schools. Vincent has performed in several countries, including throughout Asia and Europe. A native of El Paso, he holds a degree in music education and clarinet from Baylor University and Master's of Music degree in harp performance from UT Austin. He is past president and a founding member of the West Texas Harp Society and currently serves as the South Central Regional Director and board member for the American Harp Society. Vincent performs actively throughout the state of Texas and is currently completing a Doctor of Musical Arts degree at UT Austin. Rounding out the concert is a contemporary piece by acclaimed violinist and composer Jesse Montgomery titled Strum, and the finale, Symphony No. 3 by Franz Schubert. This performance is not to be missed. Tickets start at just $11 and can be purchased at mosc.org or by calling 800-514-3849. Student tickets are $8 with a paying adult or valid college ID. Patrons are also invited to experience symphony soundbites. a pre-concert dinner held before the performance in the Rhea Greathouse Recital Hall at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. By purchasing a ticket to this tasty event, patrons will enjoy dining with friends as Maestro Gary Lewis provides an insider's view of the evening's program. Bring your friends and make new ones as you enhance your symphony experience. Seating is limited and based on a first-come, first-served basis. Tickets may be purchased for $26 each by calling the Wagner Knoll box office at 432-552-4437. Deadline to purchase Soundbites tickets is January 28th. Activities, closures, planned for MLK Day. UT Permian Basin has several activities planned in the coming days to honor and remember the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The university will be closed on Monday in observance of MLK Day. Today, Educating a Nation, time, noon. Details, a lunch and learn discussion of the educational legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The presentation will be held in the Heimerman Center for Engaged Teaching, MB 2104. It will also be available virtually via Teams. Monday, a March to Remember sign making, time 4:30 p.m. Details, make signs in the SAC and march to library to watch Selma. Watch Selma. Time, 6 o'clock p.m. Details, movie will be shown in Library Lecture Hall 001. Ongoing events. Library display. The display features MLK and civil rights books. Campus food drive benefiting the UTPB food pantry. Dates, January 17th through 31st. Donations can be dropped off in the SAC, Library, and Student Success Center. Snack food items like ramen, granola bars, Pop-Tarts, and peanut butter are requested. Also, all ECISD schools and offices will be closed Monday for MLK Day. Odessa College and Extension campuses in Andrews, Monahans, and Pecos will be closed Saturday, January 15th through Monday, January 17th in observance of the Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday. Academic classes on Saturday will meet at their regularly scheduled times. The Odessa College Student Services offices will be open on Monday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. to provide in-person and virtual admissions, registration, payment, financial aid, and testing services. The OC Sports Center will observe its regular business hours on Saturday and Sunday, but will close on Monday for the holiday. All OC offices and Extension Center offices will resume normal business hours January 18th. NRA PVF endorses Landgraf. The National Rifle Association Political Victory Fund announced on Thursday that it's endorsing Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, for re-election in Texas House District 81. The press release detailed the support of pro-Second Amendment state lawmakers like Landgraf. The NRA-PVF stated it has seen unprecedented movement by the Texas legislature to restore its rights and demonstrate that the Lone Star State is a leader in the fight to protect firearm freedoms. Landgraf voted for NRA-backed bills in 2021, including Texas constitutional carry law, the press release stated. NRA-PVF details this legislation prohibits companies that discriminate against the firearms industry from obtaining state or local government contracts, emergency powers, reform measures to protect firearms businesses from closure during future state or local disasters, and a traveler's protection bill to ensure that hotel guests can transport and store their guns in overnight accommodations. NRA-PVF stated Landgraf has earned its endorsement and encouraged gun owners and sportsmen to support him for re-election in Texas House District 81 during early voting or on primary election day. Bond increased for man charged in fatal shooting. A 35-year-old man who was arrested January 8th after he admitted to Ector County Sheriff's Office investigators that he had shot his wife was again arrested on Wednesday, and his bond increased to $750,000. Samuel Adrian Chavira, 35, was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Chavira was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on January 8th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $250,000 and posted bail on January 10th. According to court records, a warrant was issued by Judge Justin Lowe of the 161st District Court for Chavira. Chavira was booked into the jail on Wednesday, and his bond was set at $750,000. He was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon. The Odessa American previously reported that ECSO deputies responded January 8th to the 11,000 block of Layla Lane, and while en route, an additional 911 call came in, and the man advised that he had shot his wife, an ECSO probable cause affidavit detailed. When deputies arrived, they located Shavira and two juveniles in the front yard. Deputies entered the home and found a woman dead on the master bedroom floor entryway, and she was face up with a wound to the right shoulder. The woman was identified as Arlie Sotelo Navaretti. The probable cause affidavit detailed that deputies saw a shell casing on the floor 5 feet away. Deputies secured the residence and waited for the arrival of CID investigators. Deputies say that investigators conducted an investigation and located a .22 caliber pistol and shell casings. Investigators also interviewed Shavira, and he admitted to shooting Navaretti. COVID surge causing staff shortages. The current surge of COVID-19 cases has hit Ector County ISD hard. During his media call Wednesday, Superintendent Scott Murray said the district has had more than 700 positive cases, adults and students, in the last 3 days. Murray said he was the only one in his office Wednesday because everyone was out sick. Quote, "We know that many of those cases are actually transmitted in our own community. So we really encourage our parents to make sure that they're supporting their kids, helping them be as safe as they possibly can be, maintain distance, make sure that they are keeping their hands clean, and certainly wearing masks when you're around other people," end quote, Murray said. Quote, "When we do our part in our community, it certainly helps the schools become a much better, safer place for our students. We're also doing things as a school system to make sure that not only COVID-19 stays out of our campuses, but that our students are safe and staff members are safe," end quote, he added. Nurses district-wide are making testing available, so any student or staff member that shows symptoms during the day can get a rapid COVID-19 test in the nurse's office. If a child tests positive, parents get information about follow-up and what they can do next to make sure their child stays healthy. ECISD also is providing air purifiers in every classroom throughout the district. Quote, "In fact, most of those air purifiers are now out. We are providing those as an additional way to keep kids safe while in the classroom. Our custodial staff continues to work diligently to make sure that areas remain sanitized, to make sure that high-touch areas are cleaned on a regular basis, and once again, to keep our kids as safe as we possibly can," end quote, Murray said. Quote, "We're doing that same activity on buses. We require kids, when they get on the bus, to make sure they use hand sanitizer, and then we sanitize those buses in between students," end quote, he added. "Students are transported in the morning and afternoon," he said. At this time, Murray said, there are no plans to close any schools. Quote, "The only reason we would do that is if we simply do not have enough staff members to safely monitor students on campus. Right now, while we do have a number of staff and student vacancies, we do not have a campus that has enough vacancies to warrant closure due to safety considerations. So we will continue to remain open," end quote, he said. Quote, "Parents, we know that's important to you so that you can do what you need to do during the day to support your children," end quote, Murray added. He also asked for compassion from the community as the district is short of teachers, administrators, secretaries, and custodians. Quote, "Every area of our system is short-staffed, so we ask that you be patient with us. If you call a school and no one answers, it could be because the entire office staff is out sick at this time. And just be aware that the absences not only are affecting our students, but staff members as well, and probably will continue to be that way for the next several months. So we just need to be thoughtful as we also deal with staffing shortages. It's much like our business community and healthcare community dealing with those very same shortages," end quote, Murray said. He encouraged all staff members and students to wash their hands on a regular basis, use hand sanitizer, and maintain as safe a distance as possible. Quote, "We know that some of our schools are certainly crowded, but to the very best of your ability, we ask our students to maintain a safe distance. And finally, mask wearing. We know that helps, and the more effective your mask, the safer you will be," end quote, he said. The district cannot close and go remote, but virtual school is available for students who qualify. Quote, "They have to meet certain criteria to do that. It is full-time. We do have students today that are in our virtual school, and they've been there all year," end quote, Murray said. Quote, "The reason we would close a building at this point is because we do not have enough adults to safely monitor the students. That's why we would close a school," end quote. Murray said the district has never had the number of positive cases it has had in one day. Quote, "It's an all-hands-on-deck opportunity. to work in a school, at a minimum, you've got to have a background check to make sure you can safely work with children. We appreciate and we need volunteers to help us maintain, but we have to run all of our volunteers through a process to make sure that they're safe to work with children and be close to kids," end quote, Murray said. He added that there are people from central office working at schools and people on campuses doing double and triple duty. On another topic, 521 seniors took the SAT during the district's SAT Day in October 2020, and 544 took it in October 2021. Murray said seniors have increased their scores by 40 points from last year to this year. Quote, "We're absolutely ecstatic about that improvement. It is an anomaly in the middle of the pandemic. As we look across the country, many locations have declined, but our students really rose to the occasion and demonstrated their aptitude, demonstrated their work ethic, and demonstrated their ability to achieve, so we applaud our seniors. We applaud the teachers that supported their work and are excited by that. So a 40-point increase from this year to last year, and then also 15 points above the state of Texas. The state of Texas score is, again, 15 points below our score," end quote, Murray said. On Tuesday night, the ECISD Bond Committee presented its proposal to the Board of Trustees. Their proposal included four specific recommendations. Build a comprehensive high school. Build a career and technical education center. Recommendation three was that ECISD take care of the maintenance and safety issues, not only in schools, but other buildings throughout the district. The fourth recommendation was that ECISD invest in technology to modernize classrooms, Murray said. The committee also recommended that the total dollar amount remain below $400 million and to hold the election in May 2022. Quote, "From this point forward, the board at the next several meetings will consider the recommendation of the bond advisory committee and then make a determination as to whether to call an election. If they choose to call an election, the date the board would vote on that would be February 15th, and we would again be targeting the May of 22 election period," end quote, Murray said. Raise Your Hand Texas, an organization that advocates on behalf of educational organizations and public education throughout the state, has created a trustee advocacy program. Quote, "They made that opportunity available to every school district in Texas. Eight school boards were selected to participate in this brand new advocacy program, and the Board of Trustees for Ector County was selected among the 1,200 school districts across the state. So we offer our congratulations to our board. They will engage for the next year and a half in this advocacy program, working with seven other school districts and their trustees across the state of Texas," end quote, Murray said. "The board will develop their skills on how to more effectively advocate for public policy, specifically around the education area, working with state senators and representatives to discuss and support education opportunities throughout Texas," he said. Man charged with solicitation of 14-year-old in sting operation. A Texas Department of Public Safety probable cause affidavit detailed a sting operation led to the arrest of a 24-year-old man who was attempting to solicit a 14-year-old girl. Leroy Montez was charged with online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. DPS detailed in the probable cause affidavit that on January 12th, special agents were conducting an undercover solicitation sting and posing as a 14-year-old girl. Montez responded to an advertisement posted on the internet. Montez agreed to meet the undercover agent who was posing as the 14-year-old girl to engage in sexual conduct, the affidavit stated. Montez initially responded to the undercover agent's advertisement on text messages utilizing the Meet Me application. Montez continued the conversation through text messages. During the conversation, DPS details in the affidavit that the undercover agent posing as a 14-year-old girl told Montez, quote, "I'm 14, almost 15, though," end quote. Montez stated, quote, "Okay, that's cool," end quote. At 5:37 p.m., Montez arrived at a predetermined location to meet what he believed was a 14-year-old girl for the purposes of sex, the affidavit stated. Odessa Police Department detectives placed Montez under arrest. During an interview, DPS says Montez made statements against his penal interest, stating that he knew that the child was 14 and the conversation indicated they were meeting for the purposes of sex. Montez was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Wednesday, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $30,000, and he posted bail the same day. Death notices. James Edward Jerkins, Odessa. James Edward Jerkins, 74, of Odessa, Texas, died Monday, December 6, 2021, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 15, 2022, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will be held private at a later date. Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. John Jerry Perkins, Odessa. John Jerry Perkins, 72, died Wednesday, January 12, 2022, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Robert A. Sadler, Odessa. Robert A. Sadler, 94, died Wednesday, January 12, 2022, in Odessa. Services are pending with Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Donald T. Smith, Odessa. Donald T. Smith, 74, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 12, 2022, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Linda Sue Shewell Sullivan, Odessa. Linda Sue Shewell Sullivan, 76, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 9, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., January 14, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastors David Newton and Ronnie Hampton are officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jane, reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, January 12th, from the Health and Wellness section. Medicare limits Alzheimer's drug coverage. Medicare said Tuesday it will limit coverage of a $28,000 a year Alzheimer's drug whose benefits have been widely questioned, a major development in the nation's tug of war over the fair value of new medicines that offer tantalizing possibilities but come with prohibitive prices. The initial determination from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, means that patients taking Biogen's Aduhelm medication will have to be part of clinical trials to assess the drug's effectiveness in slowing the progression of dementia. Medicare's national coverage determination would become final this spring, following a public comment period and further evaluation by the agency. Aduhelm's initial launch price of $56,000 a year led to an increase of nearly $22 in Medicare's monthly Part B premium for outpatient care, the largest ever in dollar terms, but not percentage-wise. Medicare attributed about half of this year's increase to contingency planning for Aduhelm. Faced with skepticism over its medication, Biogen recently slashed the price to $28,200, but Medicare enrollees were already on the hook for the $170.10 premium. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra has directed Medicare to reassess the premium increase. Medicare does not traditionally take cost into account when evaluating coverage, but rather whether the treatment is, quote, reasonable and necessary in caring for program enrollees. But the high price of Aduhelm and the fact that most of the 6 million Americans with Alzheimer's are old enough to be covered by Medicare stretched the limits. Hi, this is Jane Hellinghausen, reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, January 12th, from the Health and Wellness section. Patient receives pig heart transplant. In a medical first, doctors transplanted a pig heart into a patient in a last-ditch effort to save his life, and a Maryland hospital said Monday that he's doing well 3 days after the highly experimental surgery. While it's too soon to know if the operation really will work, it marks a step in the decades-long quest to one day use animal organs for life-saving transplants. Doctors at the University of Maryland Medical Center say that the transplant showed that a heart from a genetically modified animal can function in the human body without immediate rejection. The patient, David Bennett, a 57-year-old Maryland handyman, knew there was no guarantee the experiment would work, but he was dying, ineligible for a human heart transplant, and had no other option, his son told the Associated Press. It was either die or do this transplant. I want to live. I know it's a shot in the dark, but it's my last choice, Bennett said a day before the surgery, according to a statement provided by the University of Maryland School of Medicine. On Monday, Bennett was breathing on his own while still connected to a heart-lung machine to help his new heart. The next few weeks will be critical as Bennett recovers from the surgery and doctors carefully monitor how his heart is faring. There is a huge shortage of human organs donated for transplant, driving scientists to try to figure out how to use animal organs instead. Last year, there were just over 3,800 heart transplants in the U.S., a record number according to the United Network for Organ Sharing, which oversees the nation's transplant system. If this works, there will be an endless supply of those organs for patients who are suffering, said Dr. Muhammad Mohiuddin, scientific director of the Maryland University's Animal to Human Transplant Program. But prior attempts at such transplants, or xenotransplantation, have failed, largely because patients' bodies rapidly rejected the animal organ. Notably, in 1984, baby Faye, a dying infant, lived 21 days with a baboon heart. The difference this time, the Maryland surgeons have used a heart from a pig that had undergone gene editing to remove a sugar in its cell that's responsible for that hyper-fast organ rejection. Hi, this is Jane, reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, January 12th, from the Health and Wellness section. Research shows that cataract removal lessens risk of dementia. Older people who have cataracts removed may be gaining more than better vision. Research published in the Journal of American Medical Association, Internal Medicine, suggests that they are nearly 30% less likely to develop dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, than are people with cataracts who do not have the surgery. The key, researchers say, may be the restoration of vision that comes with cataract surgery. The finding stems from data on 3,038 people, 65 and older, who were dementia-free at the start of the study and were tracked for nearly 10 years after their decision on eye surgery. The researchers noted that visual impairment has been identified as a dementia factor, in part because it can lead to social isolation and decreased cognitive stimulation. But by restoring vision, they wrote, cataract surgery may help delay or prevent the development of dementia. By comparison, the researchers found no differences in risk for dementia among people who did or did not have glaucoma surgery, which does not restore vision. Glaucoma is a condition that attacks the optic nerve. A cataract is a cloudy area that can develop in the lens of the eye, almost always caused by normal changes in the eye that come with age. Proteins in the lens tend to break down and clump together, according to the National Eye Institute, creating the cloudy area. This can lead to such symptoms as blurred vision, sensitivity to light, and difficulty seeing at night. The only treatment is surgery to remove the clouded lens and replace it with an artificial lens, called an intraocular lens, which restores vision. More than 24 million U.S. residents have cataracts, according to the American Academy of Ophthalmology, and nearly half of people who are 80 either have cataracts or have had surgery to remove them.
Some meds can make blood sugar control harder. Dear Dr. Roach, I have been pre-diabetic for around 13 years and had been able to keep it that way through diet and exercise, no medications for it. But the real issue now is that I have developed congestive heart failure, which probably sounds worse than it really is. However, the medications I've been given for it, Lasix, spironolactone, carvedilol from my cardiologist, and finasteride for prostate issues have totally ruined my glucose numbers. I used to see around 100 in the mornings. I almost never got to the 120s. Now, after a couple months on those drugs, I am seeing closer to 150 in the morning. After meals, the numbers are running nearly 100 points higher than without them. My doctor tried to get me a drug, but that was so expensive as a copay that I had to tell the drugstore I couldn't afford that, which I can't. When I Google what to do when your glucose is affected by medication, I get all kinds of sites, but none really seem to have an alternative to the regimen I am now having to take. So to fix one issue, I fear the diabetes I have worked so hard to contain is going to become a serious problem. What do I do? LH. Answer. Many medicines can make blood sugar control worse. This can cause a person's well-controlled diabetes to slip out of control, or take a person with prediabetes and turn them overtly diabetic. Some blood pressure medicines, thiazide-type diuretics such as HCTZ, some beta blockers, cholesterol medicines, statins, niacin, and psychiatric medicines, many medicines for schizophrenia, are among the most common drugs to do so. It is often difficult to choose medicines to treat one condition while avoiding those that can make a second condition worse. Often, we choose the medications that most help the most life or health-threatening condition and deal with the consequences on the other condition as best we can. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Other woman rebuilds her life after affair fizzles. Dear Abby, I'm a 38-year-old woman who used to be nice. Then I had a 3-year affair. Knowing I'm one of America's bigger fools, and for such a long time, is infuriating. But I finally saw the light. The only person I think is a bigger fool than me is his wife. Some highlights of our romance. He gave me an STD during spring break. I found Allie's number in his contact file, and I saw a blonde in a white convertible drop him off in front of his house at 9:15 in the morning, which, according to him, never happened. My eyes don't lie. After I was struck by a car in a crosswalk, he never once called me to see how I was. After that, his teenage son followed me around town, flipping me off and shouting obscenities at me. There's more, but I'll spare you. Please warn your readers to stay away from affairs. They can demean you, your mate will lose trust in you, and the person you're having the affair with, can that person ever really be trusted? Won't he cheat on you, too? This wonderful man is an elementary school teacher. Think about what he's teaching your kids, folks. Like I said, I used to be nice. I used to care and trust. No more. This man changed not only my entire life, but also my family's. I will never forgive myself. P.S. I have spent thousands of dollars for counseling. It's a lot of money, but I'm worth it. Signed, Finally Saw the Light. Dear Finally, love may be blind, but I'm pleased you finally saw the light. I'm also pleased that you realized you needed professional help to regain some self-esteem. Your bitterness jumps off the pages of your letter. If you work on that with your counselor, too, it will be money well spent. Dear Abby, I was widowed 10 years ago after 34 years of marriage. My late husband's sister, Barbara, who is also a widow with no children or other family, considers me her sister and friend. Abby, I have never felt close to her. We are very different, and neither my husband nor I had any real contact with her other than an occasional holiday gathering. She is domineering, part self-pitying hypochondriac with no friends left. She hasn't alienated. We live fairly near each other, and I have the feeling, since the loss of her husband 3 years ago, that she's expecting me to be her companion and caregiver going into her elder years. I'd slit my wrists first. I married my husband until death do us part, not his family. I don't want to hurt Barbara's feelings. I just want to enjoy my own senior years. How can I gently remove myself from her game plan? Signed, Didn't Sign Up For This. Dear Didn't Sign Up, gently remove yourself from Barbara's game plan by being increasingly less available. She may be strong-willed and domineering, but you do not have to knuckle under to her wishes or be a dumping ground for her problems. If she asks to get together, be busy. If she's depressed, suggest grief counseling, which has helped so many. If she suggests you help her going into her declining years, explain that won't be possible because you plan to travel. You do not have to be cruel or heavy-handed about standing up for yourself. Just hang on to your sense of humor and keep your distance.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.